This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 39, Tyler Naquin, Forever. Recorded on July 21st, 2016.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast. As always, with your hosts, me, Matt Lyons, and Jason Lukart. Jason, I'm not even going to ask how you are today, because if you're not good after last night's game and after the last couple series, I don't think I'm going to believe you.
No, I confess I am good.
And you also, we were just talking about it, you won something from the Indians.
I won the thing that I wanted. The Indians were doing like Twitter trivia today, and I correctly answered a couple of the questions. I'm not entirely sure what I won. I think I won a baseball autographed by Lindor, which would be pretty cool. There's some chance I won the opportunity to watch batting practice from the field for a game next month, which would be a cool prize, but somewhat problematic because I'm not in Cleveland. So I am yet to know for sure which of those prizes I have won, but I won something because I am oh so knowledgeable.
You just went to the play index, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I did something worse when I.
You're I guessing, the last one. Or you know how to look it up.
Right.
One of the questions was, other than Lonnie Chisenhall, who's the other player with 9 runs batted in a game for the Indians? And that one was Chris James, and I randomly knew that because I remember writing about it when Chisenhall had his huge game a couple of years ago. The other one, I think, was who are the So one of the questions was about who other than Lonnie Chisenhall has had 9 RBI in a game for the Indians. That was Chris James. That one I did happen to know because I wrote about Chisenhall's game when it happened and remember it. The other one was Danny Salazar is one of 3 Indians pitchers to have 10 wins and 100 strikeouts in his first 15 starts in a season. Name the other 2. And I definitely had to use Baseball Reference to correctly answer that one with Bob Feller and Louis Tient.
I was even worse. All I answered was the last one because that was the one for the ball. And I just looked at their responses because I wasn't early. It was like 20 minutes late. And then just everybody else saying Chris James. And I figured that many people couldn't be wrong at the same time. So I just said Chris James and got it. But I didn't win. You won. So I do think if you get the ball, it's only fair that, I mean, I'm the one who interviewed him. So I think I should get the ball.
I'll think about it.
I mean, me and him, we're basically friends now. So he would want me to have the ball, Jason.
Yes, when you think about it that way, it does make sense. Although I interviewed him too. He was a prospect. So perhaps we're going to have to cut the ball in half.
There we go. As long as we don't cut the signature. No, we just get half the signature. I think that's fair.
All right. I'll, out of the kindness of my heart, I'll let you choose. Do you want the Francisco or the Lindor?
Oh, the Lindor. You could just pretend the Francisco's anybody. Nobody will believe you.
They're going to think a truffle sign is yours. Yeah,
Francisco Cervelli. You got his autograph on a ball. Okay. So, believe it or not, the Indians actually did play baseball since the All-Star break. When I sent you the notes for the preview, I completely forgot they played the Twins. For some reason, I thought they played the Royals and had a break. But the Indians did play the Twins, and they were 2-1 against them, so that was fun. 2-1 against the Twins.
Being forgotten by baseball fans for 25 years.
Especially this year. And the Indians are actually good against them, so that was different. The good over the last couple series, Jason Kipnis, he has 2 home runs, 10 hits, and 7 doubles in that streak. And then we'll talk about him more later, but Tyler Naquin has been insane. 3 home runs, 7 hits, and 3 walks to only 4 strikeouts, which is nice. Then Mike Napoli, he had 4 home runs and only 4 strikeouts. In the bad, we might as well just call this the Juan Uribe category at this point. He was 1-for-8 with 4 strikeouts. He has been just all kinds of not good. So what stood out between these 2 series, the Royals and the one that I completely forgot existed, the Twins? What stuck out to you?
Well, it's obviously nice to get off the second half on a good, as I stutter and stumble. It's obviously good to get the second half off to a good start, especially beating the Royals 2-3, since the Royals are still sort of on the fringe of contention. The offense just really continues to impress. They've hit like a bajillion home runs lately. They've hit more home runs than any major league team in the last month. I think 42 home runs in the last month. And Yeah, already in July, Naquin, Napoli, Kipnis, and Santana all have at least 5 home runs this month, even with the All-Star break in there. They just continue to hit better than anyone thought they would. And, you know, I don't think they'll continue to hit more home runs than any team in baseball during the next month. But, you know, we've said since spring training, things come together. This is going to be a good offense. Things have come together. It's a good offense. And that's the pitching is kind of as good as expected. And the offense is continuing to be the pleasant surprise. So that's all of the scoring, all of the power is what stands out to me right now.
Yeah, I think bajillion home runs is a pretty accurate estimate of what the last month has felt like, at least. Just between Napoli, you wrote earlier about Kipnis' newfound power, and then Tyler Naquin somehow having a bunch of power. It's all been really good and fun to watch. And then obviously, Jan Gomes, he injured. I didn't even have him in the notes, but he got injured. How long ago was that already? That was the Twin Series, right?
Yeah, right after the break.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Jan Gomes is out now. So I kind of got my wish in Roberto Perez. That's not how I wanted it, but he's back in the lineup. He still does not have a hit. It's going to come. Don't you worry. But in 23 plate appearances so far, he still has a .348 on base percentage because of his walks. But still no hits, a couple strikeouts, so he still doesn't look great. But when you think about it, he wasn't going to be back for another week or two the way it was planned anyway. So he's coming back way earlier than he should have. He's basically rehabbing in the majors right now. Splitting time with Chris Jimenez. But like you said, just the whole offense has been great. And the whole Danny Salazar got his 500th strikeout in his start. He was good in his. Corey Kluber was great in his. He had a shutout over 7 innings. Carrasco had 2 really good starts. So it's just everything is clicking right now. And I think it's kind of cool that everyone's starting to realize it too. Not just Cleveland. I think we were all excited for a while, but mainstream is starting to see that this team can do really good things. And they're doing a lot of really good things well. And it's going to count for something soon, I think.
Yeah, I mean, talking about going back to Gomes, you know, I think we both thought it was time for a change, and certainly an injury isn't what either of us wanted. The flip side is, you know, this forced the decision. So if Francona was sort of on the fence about, God, you know, I feel like, you know, we've got to get Gomes, you know, got to give someone else an opportunity, got to see what Perez can do. Gomes is just hitting so poorly. But on the other hand, he's a really popular guy with his teammates. And so, like, in a weird way, this is, I don't want to say nice because, again, it's an injury, but it eliminates that, like, awkward, hey, guys, we're sorry to bench one of you, but we're going to bench one of you. Like, that's not how it's playing out now. So he doesn't have to go through the disappointment of being benched. You know, we'll see what Perez does. But it did eliminate a potentially awkward situation.
Yeah, it just made the decision easier, or just made the decision. Because we were talking about it before, that there's the whole human element to it, but now that's gone. Jan is injured, and so they got Roberto Perez. And, of course, we're going to talk about trade rumors more, too, but now they might get Jonathan Lucroy, who wasn't in the lineup today, and fake accounts are all saying that the trade has happened, and now we're in a minefield of trying to find when the trade actually happens, if it does happen.
Yeah, I got duped briefly by a fake Buster Olney report that the Indians had gotten LaCroix from the Brewers in a straight-up one-for-one trade for Bradley Zimmer. And the interesting thing about getting duped, you know, thinking it's real, is I had, like, a real reaction to it. And I have to say, like, in that moment, I was okay with the Indians trading Zimmer for LaCroix.
Oh, I'm very okay with a one-for-one there. I think, I mean, well, Dan O'Dowd had his whole thing where he was going to do Clevinger and Hillman for Lucroy and Will Smith, which is insanely good for the Indians if that happened. But I would be okay with a one-for-one with Zimmer and Lucroy. And you would be too, I take it?
The O'Dowd thing would be great for the Indians. Yeah. I can't fathom the Brewers would actually go for that. I
said on Twitter someone would get fired if that happened.
For those two. He's a good player at a premium position who's crazy cheap next year. Like, they're getting at least one, you know, top 100-ish prospect for him, I think. So I feel like if the Indians are going to get him, Zimmer or Frazier would have to be involved. And so, yeah, if they can just give up one of those guys and nothing else, I'd be cool with that.
And I'd definitely be okay with it being Zimmer instead of Frazier.
That was real. I found out for sure that I'd be okay with that.
Speaking of that, have you ever been, how is that the closest you've been to being fooled and making a post about it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get, you know, like, I wrote the headline, picked a picture, wrote the tweet. wrote like the first sentence of the post. So it's not like I spent a huge amount of time on it, but I was like 5 minutes in and then was like, all right, now I need to go get the tweet to link to it. And as soon as I actually looked at the tweet, I was like, wait, this is nonsense. All I had initially seen was multiple people reacting, like retweeting and reacting. But yeah, I would have felt pretty foolish if somehow I'd gotten all the way through and had published something. I'm 99% sure I've never done that.
That would be the worst, I think. That's all those people want to make those accounts, too, is this fool somebody with some kind of reach to say that it's real.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever looked closely at a fake one and been fooled, and I would have never published a post without looking closely when I was going to actually link to it. But yeah, I did waste 5 minutes of my life. I now know definitively that I'd be okay with Zimmer for LaCroix.
It is kind of neat that you almost went into, like, I mean, the rest of us, we can say we would be okay with it, but you're the only one who has seen it and thought it happened and had a reaction to it. It's like you went in a whole other little fan dimension there, and you got your own little reaction.
As a sports fan, to tell yourself something, in 2000, when the Yankees and the Mets played in the World Series, I remember telling myself before it started that, you know what, I think I want the Yankees to win because I hate the Yankees, but God, if the Mets win, then both New York teams are winning, and that would be, I don't want any part of that. I think it would just be better to keep having the Yankees win. And that was so incredibly stupid. It took not even one full pitch into the game. It was like watching the players take the field. It's like, oh no, I was wrong. I definitely don't want the Yankees to win. So like when it was just an abstract, it was easy to think one thing. And I think trade rumors are the same way. But yeah, in this case, I really thought it was real. And now I know.
So we can just go right from that into trade. What do I want to say? Trade scenarios or trade, had a word here. The trade deadline, either way, what the Indians are thinking about doing maybe. There's been some rumors. It's been pretty much all LuCroy. A couple days ago, it was Andrew Miller. But ever since Yan Gomes' injury, which I still don't think they're going to go after LuCroy just because Gomes was injured. I mentioned before that if they were going to, I don't think them losing their worst hitter has made them suddenly say, oh, now we need to get a catcher. If they were looking for one before and they're still looking for one, fine. But I can't see Gomes going down and then them deciding that they want a catcher. And for what it's worth, they have said that they like Perez and Jimenez behind the plate, so, and of course you can't always believe that, but that's what they said so far, and that's kind of what they showed. So I still want a reliever. Have you changed at all? What do you want based on the rumors, or just based on anything?
No, I mean, I definitely think they need a reliever, you know, and things have been a little, at least delayed. The Yankees, who lost this afternoon, but had won four games in a row, and I think sort of talked themselves into, they're still contenders, so they shouldn't sell their bullpen. I think Brian Cashman really wants to sell, and ownership probably is against it because they're the Yankees and they can't be sellers because they're winners and they're going to go for it. I think that's, I mean, sort of hold up for everyone who's in the market for bullpen arms is waiting for the Yankees to sort of decide definitively what they're trying to do. I definitely want the Indians to add another bullpen arm. You know, it's been talked about in the comments at Let's Go Tribe this week that, like, if you don't think the Indians should be buyers now, you're basically saying you don't think the Indians should ever be buyers because they're in a fantastic position to make the postseason and can probably do that without making a trade. But you want the best team you can have, you know, going into the postseason. And it's easy to talk about, like, oh, the window could be open for years. It could be. Or a couple guys could get hurt, a couple guys might not develop, and the window could slam shut a lot sooner than people expect. So, I mean, I don't want them to give away Frazier and Zimmer and, you know, sell the whole farm system, but I think they need to add someone, and I think a reliever, you know, would be kind of the most obvious thing. And then if they decide to add a bat too, I'd apparently be okay with it.
Apparently, as you found out. Yeah, the Mets are kind of a example of how that can happen in a year. Last year they were kind of like the Indians are this year, and then just a ton of injuries, which can always happen, although the Indians have seen a bunch of injuries, but they recovered really well. And you mentioned about how the Indians can get to the playoffs with their current roster, so it's kind of interesting that, I mean, you're trading for a reliever now, basically what you're trading for is that one playoff game and like an elimination game in the eighth inning. So you're trading a bunch of farm prospects for that one inning. Because, like, I mean, like you said, they're going to make it anyway. Even if they weren't, I don't think a reliever would help them make it, but I do think they're going to make it into the playoffs. So you're trading a lot for one inning, essentially, or just a couple innings in the playoffs, which, I mean, if it helps you, that's good. But I wouldn't be thrilled to lose Bradley or Frazier for a reliever.
No, I wouldn't want to move either of those two for a reliever. One of those two would need to be, you know, LaCroix, or, you know, in the absence of some other equivalent position player name to go with. But I don't think they would need to give up one of those two to get a good reliever. At least I hope not.
I would hope not. I mean, I've seen some other Indians blogs and some other just random blogs have it, like Zimmer and Clevinger and someone else just for Miller. I get these under control, but I wouldn't do that ever.
Yeah, I like, I got to think there. I mean, Miller's great, but I got to think there's good relievers out there who could be had for. I mean, I think Miller could probably be had for that less, but if it turns out he can't, I think, you know, you look at your second tier relievers then. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You're looking to pick someone up for a few innings, but a few incredibly important innings, like, you know, the innings that you hope your team gets the opportunity to play. And we talked about it a little bit last week, you know, your best relievers are going to pitch a much higher percentage of your innings in the postseason than they do in the regular season. So they become relatively more important in that situation. And the Indians just, they have a need for a more dependable bullpen. Even with a great starting rotation, you know, the starters aren't going to go 8 or 9 innings every game, especially not against the, you know, the strong offenses they'd likely be facing in the postseason.
Yeah, and with Shaw, we've defended him. Everybody sort of, or I guess some people jump to his defense every time he explodes, but he has a bunch of good streaks, but then those blow-ups, I wouldn't trust him in a playoff game, because he doesn't just go bad for a couple runs. He goes really bad, and he would sink like an elimination game or something worse, I would think. So whoever they get, I just want it to be an upgrade over Shaw. Let him pitch. I don't want Shaw, like, gone or anything. I still think he's a fine reliever. I just don't want him in those high-pressure eighth-inning situations anymore, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So the next thing to talk about, since we're done with, sort of done with trades, we'll get more to it when we answer people's questions, because obviously that was the big thing people wanted to know about. But something that's kind of made the trade season more interesting has been Tyler Naquin, because holy cow, the Indians might have a center fielder already. So maybe they can trade Bradley Zimmer away now. Maybe they're not relying on him as their future center fielder, or maybe they can trade Naquin, which I don't like that one, but I don't think, like John Heyman said, our trade scenario anymore is Tyler Naquin for Jay Bruce. That almost feels like a ripoff for the Indians now at this point, or for the Reds. But yeah, Naquin on the season.
I guess it depends team, but I wonder, like, as consensus, if there are teams who would now prefer Naquin to Frazier or Zimmer. I would think probably not, because it's still only about, you know, 200 plate appearances. But he has sort of, you know, somewhat definitively shown he can definitely play at the major league level, and he's got a lot of room for aggression to still be, you know, while he'd still be really good. I have to think almost every team would still want one of the big prospects, especially because if you're trading for a guy like that, you're planning more for the future than the next few months anyway. But yeah, I mean, Naquin, I think, has exceeded everyone's expectations. I was talking with Jonah Carey on Twitter last night, and he was, you know, super excited about watching Naquin. It's fun to have that guy. I mean, you know, most seasons have a guy who does, you know, whether you say he's playing over his head or just, you know, outplaying expectations. But it doesn't feel like the Indians, you know, Lindor was awesome last year, but in a fairly expected to be awesome sort of way.
I think Lindor wasn't expected to be that good offensively, though.
Oh, I mean, not that good.
Not quite as high. Overshooting.
And, you know, since he came back up June 1st, he's been, like, one of the 5 best hitters in baseball. I mean, and he wasn't a top 200 prospect at any time. So, he's been a blast. He's, I think, the front runner for Rookie of the Year probably right now. I don't know who else it would be.
Yeah, there are a couple that can pass him. I can't remember who else. Michael Fulmer might, as a pitcher. I cannot remember the other guy. Mazzara, I think. There's someone else who might pass him. But
off right quite a now, bit, I think, though.
There's what?
Fulmer, who knows? But yeah,
but right, I mean, now, just, you're right, it's Naquin.
Naquin the last couple months.
Yeah, and whatever he did when he went down in June, when he came back up, something made a huge difference. Because, I mean, his on-base percentage, since June 2nd, it's 411, and his Slugging percentage is 761, which would be an okay OPS for some people.
Yeah. But,
yeah, he's been crazy. All 12 home runs has come since he's been come back up. And it's kind of funny that people, they point to him coming up in June and saying, oh, you shouldn't have sent him down. But when he got sent down is when something clicked somewhere.
So I don't know. I mean, he was playing pretty well early in the year. We just didn't really think it was going to last. It's not like his numbers were bad at the beginning of the year either.
Well, they weren't bad, but they were not. He wasn't drawing a lot of walks, and he wasn't hitting a ton of home runs. But now he's got a much better approach to the plate, and he's hitting everything extremely hard, which maybe it was before. I just didn't notice. But a lot of it before felt like more like BABIP luck. I don't think it is as much now. I think it's just hitting really well. And I know probably like a month in the minors didn't create all that, but I still don't think it was a bad idea to send him down when they did.
Clearly, yeah, I mean, well, I'm not going to argue with the result. So, I mean, he was only down for 2 weeks, and whatever impact that might have had, you know, I don't know. I don't really care.
Whatever it is, it worked.
He's been a monster. You know, in not even 8 weeks he's been back up, he's hit a dozen home runs. And if you had asked me before the season, you know, is Tyler Naquin ever going to hit 12 home runs in a major league season, I probably would have said no.
He's never been close to that.
So he's outdone what I thought his best season would be in, like, 35 games.
Yeah. That's not a bad way to overshoot it, I think. And just a way to look at how well he's hitting everywhere. He's got 39% has been pole hits, 35 to center, 25 to opposite field, which a couple of those, I didn't look exactly, but he's had quite a few opposite field home runs too. And then 42% hard hit balls. So yeah, there is some BABIP luck going on, but he is hitting the ball really hard and really well. Maybe he's just guessing and running.
12 home runs, he's got like another 10 extra base hits too, like 7 or 8 doubles and 3 triples, I think. Yeah, I mean, like we already said, he's been one of the 5 best hitters in baseball the last, you know, since he came back up.
So do you think him playing like this affects the way the Indians are viewing Zimmer at all, even if it's just a little bit? Or do you think either way when he comes up, he's going to bump Naquin somewhere one way or another?
I mean, I think it affects things a little bit. I don't think it's a we need to trade someone because there's not room for them all situation. I mean, you know, we've talked about Zimmer and or Frazier being up next year, and they certainly could be, but it also wouldn't be like a waste of their talent if they weren't up for a couple of years. And a couple of years from now, even if Naquin, you know, tapers off a bit but is still really good, Michael Brantley's probably not in the outfield at that point. You know, Lonnie Chisenhall probably isn't someone you're worried about pushing out of a starting gig or anything like that. I mean, in theory, Frazier, Zimmer, and Naquin, that's your outfield in 2018.
That is a very good outfield.
But I do think, you know, this, outfield. You know, I don't think they were like, oh, we can't trade one of those guys, and now suddenly it's like, oh, we can. But yeah, I think it does nudge them towards feeling more comfortable potentially trading Zimmer or Frazier.
Yeah, that's the way I would be too. I think it makes feel comfortable. Do we even want to talk about Michael Brantley right now? There's too many.
No, it's just so depressing. I'm choosing to focus on the fact that the Indians are like second in the American League in runs per game, despite basically not having Brantley all season. I'm not expecting him back this year, and I'm just kind of like choosing to forget about him for the time being.
Yeah. So do we drop the Peter Gammons clock at this point? We know he's going to be right. It's over. He won.
Yeah. I mean, there's. Never go against Peter. I guess that's the lesson.
All of his butt tweets and everything. You can't. He's going to be right no matter what he tweets out. You've seen those, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just random characters that he tweets out for some reason.
One of these days, he's going to have like, it used to be a much bigger thing. I feel like he's gotten a grip on his butt or something.
I would hope so. That's probably going to be the episode title. Okay, so moving on to what baseball is coming up. The Indians are going to be playing the Orioles. Last time they played them, I tried to look it up real quick because I forgot to do it before the show. When did they play them last?
They lost 2 of 3 earlier this season. I don't remember exactly when it was, but they lost 2 of 3.
Yeah, they won a blowout. They won 11-4, then they lost 2. Both of them were 4-6. That was before the Indians sort of became the Indians, I guess. That was in late May. But they're going to be playing them again. It's going to be Trevor Bauer against Dylan Bundy tomorrow. Which, of course, Bauer was selected number 3 by the D-backs in 2011, and Bundy was selected number 4 in that same draft, so that'll be kind of neat. And then Trevor Bauer just shot straight to the majors, and Bundy he's kind of bounced around as a reliever a little bit. He hasn't been straight to a starter, but he's going to get the start then. And then it'll be Josh Tomlin against Kevin Gausman and Corey Kluber against Vance Worley. The Orioles are 53-40. They're second in the AL East. 5-5 in the last 10. They started out really hot, and all the Orioles fans were, I think I said this last time we played them, but they were all over our podcast because we made fun of them for their free agent moves. But they haven't been so great lately. The last series, they got swept by the Yankees. As they've been all season long, they're really good at hitting the ball really far. They're first in home runs, second in slugging, but they strike out the third most, and their defense is atrocious. They're negative 13 defensive runs saved so far, which is 10th in the AL. So what do you think about this series? This isn't the Indians' strongest group of pitchers, I guess, but it's still strong, and it's still better than what they have. So like you said at the All-Star break, they're going to have another great lineup of pitchers, I think. They have the advantage in every matchup again.
Yeah. Like you said, this isn't the three best pitchers, but you're sort of splitting hairs at this point when you try to figure out who the best pitchers are. I mean, Corey Kluber has the worst ERA of the five of them, which
is not terrible.
That's the end-all, be-all or anything, but it does give you an idea of just how good the rotation is. Baltimore, it's sort of a strength versus strength when the Indians are pitching and Baltimore's hitting. As you said, they hit a ton of home runs. They lead the majors. So I think they're a challenge for even good pitching, but the Indians lineup, I think, is better than Baltimore's pitching. So, I feel like the Indians are the better team, for whatever that's worth in a 3-game series. So hopefully we're looking at another series win there. And it would be nice to beat Baltimore just because Baltimore is another contender. To the extent that there's a knock on the Indians, I guess it would be that, they're destroying the AL Central and winning their interleague games, but haven't looked great against the AL East and AL West teams are more likely to actually play in the postseason, which doesn't really concern me, but just as sort of like the narrative of the moment, it would be nice just to be like, well, there, they went on the road and beat a good team.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. And then, of course, after this, they're coming home, so that'll be nice. Maybe a couple more sellouts. That'd be really cool. I doubt it'll happen, but if they sweep the Orioles and come off the All-Star break 9-2, those would be some pretty good crowds at Progressive Field, I think. Maybe at least enough so I won't hear the soda machine in the background on the broadcast. That's really all I want. That's my only measurement of how big a crowd needs to be.
I know. Yeah, they're off today, and then after they play Baltimore, they're off on Monday, and then they're off again next Thursday. So coming off the All-Star break, they've got this road trip, but then, 3 days off, pretty close together. So, hopefully they continue to win series. And then as they head into August, they should be really well rested for a long stretch when they have very few days off. I think there's only one day in August that they're not scheduled to play.
Yeah, that's kind of the downside. I mean, they need the break now, I think, more than they would in August, maybe. Because still, the ramifications of the 19-inning game, I think, are still going a little bit. The bullpen is still burnt out just from being the bullpen, basically. But so are you worried at all in this series about Bauer and Tomlin both giving up a bunch of home runs? Because that's obviously what the Baltimore Orioles do. Or do you think, I think I have more faith in Bauer having it under control, but I would not be surprised to see Tomlin get just shelled this game.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. Certainly teams that hit a lot of home runs are more concerning to me than, teams that, score a lot of runs by getting on base and that sort of stuff. But again, I just feel like the Indians' offense is better than Baltimore's pitching. If you offered me the Orioles as an Indians postseason opponent in the, ALDS or the ALCS, I feel like of the teams that it could be, Baltimore would be, maybe at the top of my list. So, I think we're going to see them give up a couple home runs during the series, but I think they can overcome that.
Yeah, I think so, especially with the offense right now. And I forgot to mention one thing. I didn't even add to the notes. We have a very important story that happened this week, which is Trevor Bauer's drone. I don't know if you followed that at all. But it got stuck way up in a park in a tree, and he had to get it down. For some reason, his first idea wasn't just to throw baseballs at it. So he turned to Twitter to get a bunch of suggestions. People said, fire or flamethrowers and cut the tree down. But that didn't work. And it just so happens that Trevor's second drone, the second one he takes with him, was in need of repair. I'm sure he has just so many drones, but that was a fun little side story, is him getting his drone. He did eventually get it back. Who was it? Some attendant or some assistant in Kansas City?
The help of people who work for the Twins? Or I don't know. There was
It was in Kansas
City. When he was thanking someone for getting it back, there was some mention of, like, the visiting clubhouse attendance or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, but it wasn't Trevor Bauer that threw a baseball at it. It was the visiting clubhouse attendant. Trevor Bauer noted in that video that, you know, my control, I couldn't hit it. Oh, that was great. He's just so self-aware about everything. And as, like, a little tangent, I think baseball needs to embrace more of what, like, Bauer is doing. Because we talked about it either last week or the week before that they have a real problem with getting players' personalities out there and getting to know the players. But the way Bauer does all this, like, vlogging stuff and all this behind the scenes, he posted another video of him doing his driveline baseball stuff. That was really neat. You got to see what he does before a start. So at the very least, I hope baseball isn't trying to minimize what he's doing with all this stuff. And at most, I would hope they're encouraging other players to do it. I think it's really neat. And that's one reason I like Trevor Bauer so much, because I like personalities in the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's like him or not, he's not afraid to be himself. And, you know, I think he's different from sort of the average baseball player in terms of his interests and sort of his mindset. And, yeah, I mean, I think the Indians do a pretty good job of putting attention on some of that stuff and having fun with it. And, you know, I don't know what all MLB does, but he's also just, you know, not a big enough name at this point for me to expect MLB to be giving him that much attention anyway. But yeah, there's lots of good stuff with Trevor. Lots of fun.
Yeah, I just prefer what he's doing over, like, because I know Bryce Harper does a lot of social media stuff, but it's always that, like, stuffy, you can tell it had to cycle through a bunch of different people before he could post it kind of thing. But Trevor's, you can tell it's just him with a camera, he just throws some music on a video and posts it, so that's really cool. I just want more raw-ish stuff. I don't like the overproduced kind of thing, like, you can tell
they're handling it. I do too, but also, like, to a point.
I get why they do it.
The truth is, stuff's really raw, and then I totally disagree with it, then it's like, oh, I wish I didn't know that.
I don't mind disagreeing. I can't think of a specific instance where there was some kind of, like, behind the scene thing that I disagreed with, where I didn't wish I would have seen it. I just like seeing that kind of stuff.
No, for me, there's all kinds of stuff where, like, people like political stuff or things like that, where it's like, I would have preferred not to have known that about you.
But, and then there's Bauer too. I mean, when there was the debates, he was doing stuff and fighting the people on Twitter, but I don't mean that kind of stuff. I just mean their everyday life.
Yeah, I agree. Like, outside of politics, just in terms of, like, what guys are up to, yeah, I agree. Like, I'm happy seeing all that sort of stuff.
So anything else about the Orioles coming up, or just anything in general before we get to social media questions?
No. A week ago, I said I hoped we were talking about the Indians having won two more series, and so I hope a week from now, I guess the series against Washington is only two games, but I'll be greedy and say I want them to win that. Keep winning series, keep building on the lead. They've got the best record and the best run differential in the American League. It's fun.
Yeah, if they do win the series against Baltimore and then sweep Washington, maybe that could be a little tiny chip away at the narrative of they can't beat the good teams. A tiny little bit, maybe. Okay, so our first question, kind of something we've talked about before, but we can address certain parts of it. But Jake Burns 18 on Twitter asks, would you rather spend more on a club-controlled Miller or less on a Chapman rental, considering the Yankees even sell? So, I mean, let's make it, because we've talked about Miller and Aroldis Chapman specifically enough, I think. So would you rather spend more on a player who's maybe not quite as good, but you have him for an extra year or two, or go out on a player who's one of the best at his position, just in general?
I mean, having the best is nice, but generally I would rather, if the difference between the two players is pretty close, have the guy you're going to have longer.
Yeah, that was my answer too. And specifically with Miller and Chapman, I would want Miller because the cost controlled and the fact that Chapman just is not a good person. It'd be hard to root for him ever.
Once you get into the specifics of it, which I know some fans don't care about at all, but I can't bring myself not to care about. I mean, in the specific situation, I would prefer Miller. And in the general situation, I would prefer the guy that you've got, you know, under team control for a longer amount of time. And while, I mean, Chapman's great, but he's not – is he better than Miller? I mean, you know, if you look at their numbers for this season, Miller has the lower ERA and the lower FIP. You know, his strikeout rate is actually higher. His walk rate is lower. I'm not sold on the fact that Chapman even is better. You know, even if you could have them for the same amount of time, for the same amount of money, I guess – when you go beyond this season, you'd have to give Chapman the edge. But I don't think it's much of an edge at all.
At the very least, it's close enough, like you said, where if it's close, you'd want the one where it's longer under control. It's like a coin flip how good they are. But I would take the one where you get an extra year or two, too. Especially for a reliever, because you get like 20 innings out of him for a couple top prospects. It's sad. Okay, so our next one is Rox Fox Sports on Twitter, Kristen Johnson. She posts a lot on fan posts and stuff in the comments. She wants to know, what do you think of this piece from Baseball Perspective? Which I sent the article to you. I'll post it in the link too. But it's basically, I mean, it's Baseball Perspective, so obviously it's a level-headed argument. But they're basically saying the Indians aren't as good as a 14-win team, and they're also not as bad as they looked at points this season. They're just kind of somewhere in between. They also brought up the point that the narrative that they're beating only bad teams in the AL Central, which is kind of true. They only beat them up. They played a bunch of AL Central teams. But what do you think about the post from Baseball Perspective?
Yeah, Kat Garcia is the author, and she does good work. I can't say, you know, I read everything she's written or anything like that, but I have a high opinion of her work. And yeah, I feel like, I mean, I would say ultimately saying the Indians aren't as good as their record makes them look. And as you said, you know, she brings up, you know, beating bad teams and losing to good teams, which is true, but it's also, you know, the good teams in the American League that she's talking about, you know, the Red Sox, the Orioles, the Rangers, the Astros, you know, the teams that they're most likely to play. Yeah, the Indians have technically lost more than they've won against all four of those teams, but they've lost one more game than they've won against all four of those teams. They're 2-3 against Boston. They're 1-2 against Baltimore. They're 1-2 against Texas. So it's not like they're getting swept or killed by these better teams. So it's not a big concern to me. You know, I'd rather have a big lead in the division and have lost a few extra games against good teams in other divisions than have a better record against good teams but have lost a couple more games against Detroit and Kansas City and only have like a 3-game lead. So, I mean, to her point that they're maybe not quite as good as best record and best run differential in the American League, I can buy that. I'm not convinced they're necessarily the best team in the American League. But it doesn't concern me. And she talks about their offense being average overall and below average for a contender. And I just don't think that's true. I think, you know, whether you look at runs per game or, you know, weighted runs created plus, which is sort of my favorite metric, they rate as above average in both and as sort of average among contenders. So I guess I would disagree with that part of her argument. I think as playoff contenders go, the Indians have an average offense and really good starting pitching. And there's no reason a team with that combination can't win the World Series.
Yeah, I agree. I think the offense is better than she says. And the thing with the teams is if they didn't beat all these teams, we'd all be saying these are teams they're supposed to beat if they were a good team. So, I mean, there's no winning. They have to play who they played. They beat them really well. So that's what good teams do. And then another thing she says is that the Indians bullpen is better than their offense. She said a little bit better. It's imperfect, but a liability. I'd have it a little bit lower than that, I think. Maybe it's just watching and seeing one too many implosions, and I'm just getting used to it. But I would rank their bullpen as their biggest weakness at this point.
Every team that has a not great bullpen is probably more bothered by their bullpen than, like, non-fans, just because watching your own team's bullpen screw up is, like, the most painful thing. So I feel like it stands out a little bit more. But yeah, I'm with you. The bullpen concerns me more than the offense.
So yeah, it was a really good post. Kat did a good job, and thanks, Kristen, for asking it. So our next one is CleFan684 on Twitter. He wants to know, it's probably been asked before, but if you're Cleveland, do you give up 2 top 5 prospects for Lucroy or Will Smith package? Are you including Zimmer or Frazier? So basically he's asking if you could make a non-dumb version of Dan O'Dowd's trade proposal, what would you put in it? I would put one of Zimmer or Frazier for sure. Not both of them, but one of them I wouldn't hesitate at all to put them in something else for both Lucroy and Will Smith, because they can get a catcher and a reliever in a deal. I am all for that. So basically Zimmer and Frazier and nearly whatever else the Brewers would want, I would throw in there. What about you?
I mean, yeah, I would say, like, in terms of top five guys, and I mean, then we get into who are the top five guys, and there's no consensus there. I feel like if somehow they could get those guys without giving up Frazier or Zimmer, You know, just about any two guys would be fine with me.
Do you think they can, though, without Zimmer and Frazier, or Zimmer or Frazier?
Not to, unless the Brewers are just a lot higher than I am on, you know, at least one of those other guys. And I'd be fine giving up Frazier or Zimmer. I wouldn't want to give up. I don't think I'd give up like another top five guy with one of those. I'd want more of like a little lower down secondary guy with one of those guys. I'd like to have Will Smith. He doesn't move the needle a ton for me though. So I wouldn't want to give up like Zimmer and another top five guy, I don't think.
I think the good thing about the Brewers where they are is they would be okay with someone like Hillman. I mean, obviously you need something more than Clevinger, but they're a ways away from competing. So they would be okay, I think, with those deep down in the system prospects like Hillman, and I wouldn't count Mejia in there. But there's a few other down in like Mahoning Valley and Lake County where they're still a ways away, but that's okay for the Brewers, and it's not going to help the Indians in their window. So I'm okay with quite a few of those.
Who would you, you know, with to the extent that we can know the prospects, who would you rather the Indians trade away, Zimmer or Frazier?
Oh, boy. I think Zimmer. I'd rather keep Frazier.
Yeah, me too.
I know it shouldn't impact the Indians' thought process, but Tyler Naquin has definitely impacted mine a little bit. Just the fact that he's been so good. I mean, it's not completely shaping my decision, but knowing there's at least maybe something there for the future, because Clint Frazier has been so good, and I think he's going to be really good in right field or wherever they put him, that I'm okay with Naquin or somebody else in center if it means keeping Frazier in right field. And that has almost nothing to do with the fact that Zimmer hasn't looked great in Double-A this season. He's starting to get a lot better now, but his stock in my mind hasn't dropped a ton. It's just that Frazier's been so good, and the Indians have Naquin and maybe another outfielder coming. No, they don't. But yeah, either way, it's Frazier. That's my choice. Okay, so what is the next one? Cawthorn Sid. Sid Cawthorn on Twitter. He wants to know, if the Indians trade for Lucroy, again, a bunch of Lucroy stuff, does this mean the end of Gomes as an Indians catcher? I would hate to see him go. I'll let you take that one. So if the Indians get Lucroy and still have Gomes when he gets back, what's going to happen there? We'll say long term. Yeah. I think in short term, obviously, Lucroy is a catcher. But is this the end of Gomes on the Indians if they get Lucroy?
I certainly don't think you keep them both for next year. I think you look to trade one of them during the off season, and then in terms of which one it is, I guess it, you know, comes down to.
Wouldn't even think of that.
I mean, I think potentially, yeah. I mean, if pitching staff loves Gomes and he, you know, if they think he can bounce back, you know, then you can still get a lot of that value that you just gave up for LaCroix. You can get a lot of it back, you know, by trading away a full season of him. Because the team you're trading to at that point can also anticipate getting a big draft pick when he leaves if you trade him during the offseason. So I don't think, I mean, in some ways that would be like an interesting just plan, is to trade for him right now, figuring you can boost your catcher by a lot for the rest of this season in the postseason, hopefully, and then you can get back like 80% of that value by just trading him away and going back to Gomes. So I don't think they keep both catchers, but I don't think it's necessarily Gomes who gets traded away.
Wow, I did not even think about that. Although, what do you think the fan reaction would be? I guess either way. So if the Indians do that trade and they win the World Series, are people going to be pissed that they traded the catcher away that helped them win? And then, like on the flip side, if they make that trade and don't make it, it's going to look like, I mean, most people should know that they made the trade. It's not a guarantee. But most people would see him making the trade and then see him trading away for not all the value and think it was a waste. So I think either way, a lot of fans wouldn't like it, but that is a really good idea. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to trade him, you have to trade him during the offseason, because the second next season starts, a team who trades for him can no longer get a draft pick for him. So his value plummets the second the season starts. But I don't, you know, I mean, his trade value would be lower than it is right now. But to the right team, it wouldn't be dramatically lower. So yeah, you'd be giving up some value in the return. But if you think you're going to win a couple extra games the next, you know, 2.5 months because of him, and you think, you know, he boosts your chances of winning the World Series if you make the postseason by, I don't know, even 5-10%, I think that's worth the lost talent you can expect between the two trades.
Yeah, definitely. I really like that plan now. I didn't think about it at all, but I want him to do that now. It depends on what they trade for Lucroy, I guess, but I like the idea of renting him for half a year and then trading him. That's really cool. Okay, so our next one comes from Facebook. It's Mark Shelton, Sheffleton, I think. He asked, is Lindor a stronger candidate for the Silver Slugger or the Gold Glove? I think this one's pretty easy. The Silver Slugger. I don't think he's that close to a Gold Glove. I mean, he's fourth in WRC. He doesn't have as many home or WRC plus. He doesn't have as many home runs as the other shortstops. And he is tremendous as a defensive shortstop. He's first in defensive run saves with 11, and the next closest to the Witsi gets 6, and he's first in UZR. Do you disagree with that at all?
No. I mean, no. He's hitting so much better than I thought he would. I thought he'd be an above average hitter. But you know, he's solidly above that. But he's not the best hitting shortstop in the American League. Whereas his defense, you know, there's a completely legitimate argument that he deserves it. And I feel like he gets a lot of attention for it too. So, you know, I was certain he wasn't going to start the All-Star game because he doesn't have that kind of recognition yet. But the recognition for the Gold Glove is a little different than the recognition to be an All-Star.
Yeah.
If the Indians win the division, which shouldn't matter, but probably does, and he continues to hit well, which shouldn't matter, but definitely does, I think there's a good chance he will win the Gold Glove.
Yeah, and he makes, again, it's not something that should matter, but he makes a ton of pretty-looking plays that it gets him a lot of attention.
Yep.
That's another big thing. I would give him the shortstop Gold Glove and maybe, like, split the second base Gold Glove. Just whoever wins it has to give him half. I think he's deserved that much. He's been that good. So we'll finish up the questions with one from AJ Boyer 24 on Twitter. He wants to know, what has surprised you most about this year's team? Do you want me to take it first while you're thinking of something?
Go for it.
Okay, mine, probably the obvious one, is Tyler Naquin. We already talked about it. He is, I don't care what anybody says, nobody saw him being this good with this many home runs. And weirdly enough, this bad on defense. So he's a surprise in both directions. His offense has been amazing. His defense, not quite so much. But I guess also just the whole outfield has been a huge surprise. Jose Ramirez playing well in left field. Just the fact that the Indians haven't missed Michael Brantley a whole lot is a huge surprise. Led by Naquin and Davis and Ramirez and even Chisenhall in right field. So I guess the whole outfield is my answer. Mainly Naquin, but the whole outfield.
Really obvious and correct answer. I guess since you handled that, I'll look at the pitching side. And in terms of something that's a surprise, that all five guys are pitching as well as they are. I mean, I thought the rotation would be really good, but I sort of figured, you know, four of them would be really good and, you know, maybe even three of them. I didn't think all five guys would be, you know, top 15 or whatever they are in a lot of the categories. The starting rotation to this point, you know, being 5 for 5. Just because I don't think you should ever expect that.
Yeah, we
Bauer and Tomlin have both, you know, been better than projected or anything like that.
Yeah, you usually expect maybe 3. We didn't even think Bauer would be in the starting lineup to start the season, and now he's one of the 5 that are great. And if I was going to go just to expand a little bit of prospect, I think the other obvious answer, but it's worth mentioning, is Francisco Mejia, who... Wow. The Indians suddenly have a legitimate catching prospect. Oh, he's a switch hitter, which is also great. Apparently his defense hasn't been great this year, and he's been sat out a couple games lately, which kind of looked like a trade at first, but it might be a disciplinary thing. We don't know. I mean, I haven't heard any kind of confirmation about that, but that's just kind of a thing out there. But just the way he's playing has been a real surprise. So as far as prospect goes, he's my biggest surprise there. I know you don't follow the minor leagues quite as close, but do you have any prospects who have surprised you?
No, I mean, the farm system as a whole, when you, you know, look at the top 15 guys or so, most of them are having good years. So, you know, between Naquin far outperforming anyone's expectations and a lot of the other guys, I mean, I think you've got to really applaud, you know, the Indians draft team and development team. You know, the year that Naquin was drafted looked like sort of a, you know, a black hole draft, but now suddenly they might have a rookie of the year come out of it. I'm really impressed with, you know, what the player, the drafting and development has been. You know, 3 years ago, the Indians had, you know, probably one of the 6 or 7 lowest rated farm systems. In the last couple of years, moved up, you know, into the middle and then into the top half. And I feel like at this point, you know, they have one of the top 8 or 10 farm systems in baseball. And that's even with you know, guys like Lindor and Naquin not being counted because they're not in the farm system.
It is just the whole, are the drafts just better than we thought, or are they getting better recently? Because, I mean, these aren't recent drafts at all, so nothing's really changed. Just, I guess at the higher levels, players have been getting really good, so
maybe there's something in the water. Changes in the draft team, I want to, you know, 2007, definitely, and then I can't remember what the other year was. But no, I mean, in terms of what we're starting to see in Cleveland, you're looking at, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. But again, the guys they've drafted in the last few years, almost all of those guys are doing well in the farm. So whether it's drafting better or developing better, things are clearly going well.
And as we wind our baseball talk down here, I just want to point out that Indians still haven't made a trade. Right before we started, it was pointed out that Jonathan Lucroy was out of the lineup, but still no trade. So if this goes out by tomorrow,
10 days, so there's plenty of time. Something's going to happen, I'm convinced.
It better not happen before we release this. I'm going to post it early in the morning just to make sure. Because part of me was hoping that something would happen while we were doing the show, and then we could talk and then quickly edit it and get it out. That'd be some good timing, but just don't do any trades between now and 8 in the morning tomorrow, Indians. That's all I ask. So, what are you going to be doing next week and this week and all that fun stuff?
I don't think I've got any big plans. So watch some baseball, mow some grass, try to survive the heat we're going through in Chicago right now.
Do you guys have a drought too or no?
It's been pretty dry. I tend not to think of it a drought just because I'm not a farmer, but I guess it's been pretty dry.
We have just a straight up drought advisory. All our grass is dead and
no, we've had some rain. It's been a little dry, but I don't think it'd be considered a drought here.
And I'm just going to be playing Pokemon. I haven't had a chance to play it maybe one night since the last time we talked. I've been waking up in cold sweats, swiping my phone, just trying to catch something.
You're falling way behind if you're only playing once a week. Your Pokemon are going to get destroyed or something.
Or something. Well, tomorrow, I'm going to miss the Indians game, but it's for a good reason. It's because me and my wife found not a babysitter, but my in-laws are going to take the kids for the night, and then we have another set of friends who have somebody that's taking their kids for the night, so 4 grown adults are going to pile in a van and play Pokemon all night.
Sweet. That's the life right there. So I've been told.
And if I can convince them, we're going to listen to the Indians game while we're doing it. But I don't think I'll win that one.
Well, yeah. Fight the good fight.
You need to start playing. It's going to happen.
I don't think it is, but I've survived the initial wave of hype. I feel like if you don't get pulled in by the initial wave of hype.
And for what it's worth, the Hellcats, they opened up their stadium to do Pokemon Go, but they're kind of late on that now. You had like a 2 or 3 day window when you can do that. The Rubber Ducks did it. The Clippers did it. That was fine. But the Hellcats are doing it, I think, like next week. Have we ever talked about their awful names on the podcast yet, by the way?
I think a couple weeks ago we talked about the voting.
Okay, because they're all terrible. I don't know who's winning, but I just want lamb chops. Okay, so anything else?
Not for me.
Okay, thank you everybody for listening. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff. And go to letsgotribe.com. See you later. We'll be right back.